Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're doing great. Hey, first of all, hey, for Bobby and RJ, man, I just want to tell you guys, I appreciate your grit, your toughness, your determination. I mean, hey, I got a little chest cold. You can probably hear my voice. And, hell, I showed up to work today. So, Sean, wherever you are listening, man, I tell you what, I hope you feel better. But, damn, thank goodness for Bobby and RJ leading the charge, man. Because, man, your grit is real, guys.
Next man up isn't just a slogan, coach. It's a philosophy. It's a practice of ours.
Hey, see, I love that. See, now we're doing things. Hey, well, what was it? It was Pip, right? Lou Gehrig.
Wally Pip.
You know, hey, this could be the Bobby and RJ show. You know, I kind of like the ring of that. Quite honestly,
there we go. So I've always wondered this. Okay, and we're gonna get into football. I promise. What happens if a coach has like something like this happen during? Yeah, you throw some Imodium? What happens? I've never heard of a coach missing a game. Like, it's got to happen.
Hey, listen, we have so many trainers that they give you pills. They do things to you that just holds it in, man. And then sometimes you go in the concussion protocol tent and you just have to relieve yourself. I mean, you know, stranger things have happened. Hey, I heard you guys were with the first responders, man. That's so cool. Appreciate you guys doing that. And you talk about some real heroes, man. That's big time.
That's awesome. Thank you, Coach, for saying that. Brian Schottenheimer joining us here, 105 through the Fan. All right, three games in. Have you learned more about your team or yourself as a head coach through 3 weeks?
Oh, man, I think the answer is both, man. I think, you know, with the team, I think, you know, we're realizing again the way we're built and that we do have some resilience and we do have some fight. When you look at the Giants game, you know, that we believe we can find ways to win close games. I think we're also learning, you know, the things that we need to do from a communication standpoint on both sides to be better. I think we're learning, you know, that, like you guys said, all about the ball or winning the turnover battle can't just be a slogan. Like, we have to do that, you know, and, unfortunately, right now we're turning it over too many times, and we're not getting the ops. And then, you know, I'm constantly learning, man. I mean, you know, there's things I learn, you know, every day and every game, and whether it's, you know, game management stuff or how to best affect, you know, the defense when I'm calling plays and being the head coach and things like that. I'm constantly learning. So, and what I would say to you guys is, you know, when it's all said and done and we win a Super Bowl, I think we're going to still continue to be that way. And the quest for knowledge, man, and growth should never stop in anything you do in life.
Have you had a play, not necessarily a play call, but a game management decision that you made, and then as soon as you made it, you second-guess it? Or are you a, hey, I made it, let's go, forget about it?
No, I do make decisions that way. I make decisions knowing that, hey, they're either going to work or they're not. And if they work, you know, you'll be a hero. And if they don't work, you'll be, you know, a goat. And that's all part of it. A goat in a bad way, not the greatest of all time. I go back to the right before the half against the Giants. You know, I just did not do a great job of communicating to Dak the situation that we're in. We have words that we use that kind of put him into a mindset, and we did not need to have the ball get left in bounds. And that's one that pops out where, again, I need to be clear with my communication to him using that code word that tells him and puts him into the mindset that he can't throw the quick out to Jake Ferguson unless he knows Fergie can get out of bounds. So, but again, like I said, you guys usually catch me in a good mood because I've just been spending the last 30 minutes doing all game management things from around the leagues with Ryan Feeder, who's our game management coordinator.
Coach, you know, you talk about the communication, and specifically that's been a big talking point, I think, the last couple weeks about the defense. Obviously, without getting into specifics of signals and things like that, can you just walk us through what good communication should look like on defense from the time they're in the huddle getting the call to the whistle is blown at the end of the play?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, obviously the play call comes in from Flus or whoever the coordinator is around the league, and there's a green dot. Each team has a green dot that's allowed to make the call. You actually have guys that have multiple guys that can potentially do it based on your package that you have for personnel groupings. But the guys come into the huddle, the play call is made, whatever the wording is. But what's so critical about communication on defense, guys, is that the call, I'm just going to use a random one. It's not even one of ours. Let's just go base cover three. Well, base cover three is going to play a lot of different ways based on the formation sets that the offense brings. And you know our league right now is all about shifts and motions and change of strengths and, you know, the challenges that we create. So base cover three versus pro formation, which really nobody runs a whole lot of anymore, looks very different than it does in slot or versus one back slot or versus four open where there's no tight end in line and there's two guys to the right, offensive players to the right, two guys to the left, and there's no tight end line. So if you do not have players that are communicating and sharing information, then therefore you are at a disadvantage. Mm. And we've had that at times at a very high level. And then we've had that at times at not a very high level. And so one of the things that I love that we've done this week is in our meetings, we've had basically everybody but the D-line in there. So linebackers are in there. I'm in there. Coaches are in there on defense. The safeties sit together in a group. The corners sit together in a group. The nickels sit together in a group. And the call comes in, and we watch the practice film, and they're making all their calls as the formation on video goes up. And why is that important? Well, it's important because if we can't communicate at a high level in a meeting room where everybody's sitting in a chair, everybody's comfortable, then how are we going to do it, you know, on Sunday night in front of 75, 80,000 people screaming, going crazy, crowd noise and all that stuff. So I know it sounds easy and we need to do it better. In no way, shape, or form am I saying we don't need to do it better. But it's not as easy as it seems, and that's why you have to work so hard on it. And that's why we have continued to emphasize it and make the changes that we've made in terms of making these guys have to do it at a higher level in the classroom before we ever get out to the field and do it.
Cowboys head coach Brian Schottenheimer joining us here on 105 Through the Fan. We got 9 minutes into this without saying Micah Parsons' name. I think we deserve a blue ribbon for that.
Coach, good job, guys.
Coach, I'm going to ask you hopefully a little bit different angle of this than you've been asked before. Your first year here, you would help with mock game plans for Dan Quinn, where you'd kind of show him, my understanding, where you'd show him how to attack the defense, how you would attack the defense if you were coaching the opponent that week. So when game planning for an impact player like Micah Parsons this week, does it help at all that you've already gotten kind of a year's worth of designing practice game plans for stopping Micah that first year you were here with DQ?
Yeah, I mean, look, game planning a guy like Micah or an elite player, you know, which is not new to any week. You know, you got whether it's, you know, the Giants that have three guys. I mean, Green Bay has a bunch of guys. You know, Rashawn Gary's a hell of a player. Mike is a great player. Xavier McKinney is a great safety. And the backers, the team speed's amazing. I would say the awareness of the player is a positive in terms of how to game plan them. But again, you know how Jeff Hafley, the defense coordinator of Green Bay, is going to use them. I mean, I think they're still learning Micah. So they're going to have new wrinkles and things that maybe that DQ or Zim or Flus, you know, might not have done with Micah. So I think that's the challenge. But that's the chess piece, and that's the chess match, you know, I like to say, because that's what we live for. But, you know, we all know the talent of Micah Parsons and the ability that he has is incredible. But, you know, why they're so good is that he's not the only piece. You know, I mean, Rashawn Gary's a damn good football player. Walker and Cooper, both inside backers, are damn good football players. And the team speed is real. And then, you know, they got Van Ness, and I mentioned McKinney. So it's more than just one player. But getting back to your original question, I think the awareness of you know, understanding Micah a little bit helps. But they're going to use them different ways, and that's where we have to be ready to adjust on game day.
Coach, you had gotten a lot of questions the first couple weeks about Mozzie Smith and Jaden Blue being active, both of them. Mozzie Smith was active in week three. Jaden Blue was still inactive on the shelf. What progress have you seen from Mozzie that you're still looking for from Jaden to be active on game day?
Well, I'm going to say this about Jaden. Jaden's actually put together a couple really good weeks of practice. He has. We challenged him. We talked to him about consistency, working harder on the scout team and things like that. Man, and shoot, hey, give him credit. He's been terrific. Unfortunately, you know, we've been a little bit heavier on the defensive side when you look at the roster construction on game day. It's usually, I think it's been like 23, 21, and then we've got the four specialists with CJ. And so we've been a little bit higher on the defensive side of the ball. So, again, in no way, shape, or form is Jaden doing things that would not allow him to be activated. It's been more of the fact that we've needed the numbers with some of the injuries and stuff on defense and in the secondary and things like that. And then in terms of Mozzie, man, like, here's a guy, we sat him down and we just like with Jaden, told him, hey, here's where you are. Here's why you're inactive. It's nothing that's going to last forever, but you have to do your part. And I think he's done that. And, you know, we see him learning to play the attack front better. Like, let's remember, I mean, we're 3 weeks into, you know, learning this new defense and trying to get everybody on the same page with it. And, you know, it's different for Mozzie, and Mozzie missed quite a bit of time during the offseason program. And so I do think that both those players that you mentioned are doing everything in their power because they want to be out there with their teammates and they want to do what they love, which is to play football in the National Football League and to run and hit and do things like that. So a lot of times when guys are made active or inactive, it's because of things outside of their control. And I think it's a great question. It's the first time I've said it's a great question because it is a great question because you're trying to educate people. And if a guy's inactive, it doesn't mean he hasn't had a good week of practice or that we don't believe him. It just means that the league limits our ability to put everybody out there and you have to make some hard decisions.
Coach, what did Cleveland do defensively that really kind of handcuffed Green Bay last week?
On the defense side of the ball?
Yeah, like what did Cleveland do defensively against Green Bay?
Yeah, again, I think what they did a really good job of not giving up big plays. Again, you know, it's Captain Obvious there. I do think that they did a nice job stopping the run. You know, this is a really good run team coming in here. You know, Jacobs is a hell of a back, and, you know, they do a really good job with shifts and motions. But those are the two things that I would say is you can limit a team like that that's got speed with Matthew Golden and quarterback and Jordan Love that's really good at, you know, distributing the ball around. So not giving up explosives anytime you hold a team to, you know, 10 points like that, it's really impressive. And but I will say, like, you know, they tried to make them one-dimensional. And, again, I think that they did a nice job with that. And, you know, if – listen – you know, it's like I felt it last week in the fourth quarter. You know, I mean, we were running the hell out of the football, guys, and, you know, it just got to the point where we felt like we had to go. You know, and we were down 17 going into the fourth quarter, and it's like when you become one-dimensional as an offense, it's hard, and I felt like Cleveland did some good things to, you know, put Green Bay into that mindset a little bit.
Last one for you, Coach. This is kind of, a football 101 type of question. You've described guys on the team before, CeeDee Lamb recently, as great practice players. Is that just about their effort level, or are there specifics that make guys great practice players?
Effort first. The way we say it is we always critique effort first, right? We really do. We coach effort, but you really critique it because if guys aren't giving effort, that's hard for us to control, you know. Now, we pointed out we have loafs and guys that we show examples of guys really running great to the ball. But it's more than that for sure. It's the intentionality. It's a guy that when he comes out to practice, you see he's ready to work. You see that when he's not involved in special teams, he's doing something to get better. He's on the jugs. He's working release drills. If he's a defensive lineman, he's working pass rush drills, whether with his coach or you know, on his own. And then there's a guy that also, when you see the play start end, you know, you see there's communication with his teammates. And then, you know, every practice that we have, we've got these you know, basically these tablets out there that, that have the plays. So let's say we get done with a five-play rack on defense. And, you know, the five plays are over and there's going to be mistakes. That's why you practice. Well, the great practice players like Solomon Thomas and those guys, we have multiple guys, Kenny Clark, Malik Hooker, guys like that. They're going to go and grab that iPad and they're going to look at the reps because they want the corrections to be made immediately in their mind. That way, when they come in the film session with the coaches that afternoon, when the coach puts the film, like what I love is, as I remember this with Andrew Luck, like we'd go practice, we'd come in and then literally be like play 5 of 7 on 7 or something. And we'd start to read the comment. Be like, okay, hey, we're in gun truck right there. And he'd be like, yep, hey, I missed the backside safety. He was leaning to the front side. I should have given T.Y. Hilton the backside slant because it was 4 press, and I knew the safety was cheating up over the top. And you're like, okay, this guy's already seen the practice film. So it makes your ability to coach him a lot easier.
Hey, Coach, we really appreciate it. Great stuff. Thanks for taking that dig at Sean, and we'll try to get him back toughing it out next week.
Yeah, I'm really worried about him, guys. Make sure you get to my assistant. Make sure, you know, I like send some flowers maybe, you know, and maybe, you know, some nothing bunk cake or something like that.
There we go.
And a little lemon.
hey, lemon cake. But hey, seriously.
There you go.
Guys, man. Enjoy the time with the first responders, man.
Thank you so much, Coach. Brian Schottenheimer, head coach of the Dallas Cowboys, brought to you by Black Rifle Coffee Company, the official coffee of the Dallas Cowboys. What do we have coming up next in Below the Belt?
Boy, are the Cowboys about to come into even more salary cap space. Ooh. Let's talk about it next in Below
the Belt
here on The Fan.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Snap to Murray, drops straight back, looks left, short throw to the left, caught DeMercado, 5, breaks a tackle, heads for the end zone, touchdown! With 28 seconds left, the Cardinals a point away from tying the game.
Cardinals radio with the call. What a stinker that ended up as a competitive game late from a score standpoint, but the Seahawks do prevail after that touchdown. The Cardinals did not kick it into the landing zone.
Yeah.
And then so they were able to get it at the 40-yard line. Seahawks go down, kick a field goal.
They got iron-domed there.
Iron-domed?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what that's called?
Yeah. That's what that's referred to. Keep going.
All right. So Cardinals lose 23-20. Cardinals radio with the call.
Yeah, and it is, I mean, the fact that Arizona was even able to competitively get back into that game surprised me because I thought that was going to end up being a blowout. But
they had 6 points with like five and a half to play,
yeah.
Six to play.
Yeah, it was a we ended up getting a competitive finish though, and then that ending where they kick it short of the landing zone, then you get the review on the catch, and Sam Darnold has another really really strong performance.
Should they have gone for two? It wouldn't have mattered.
No.
They would have won.
You're at home. You're at home.
Oh, you buy that. You play into that. Huh?
You're at home, and there's time left for them to get into field goal range. It's not worth potentially missing, and then
gotcha.
You lose.
Then you're screwed.
Yep.
Yep. All right. Well, it is time. It is the expressway, the commercial-free expressway. We have the junk drawer coming up at 7:40. But right now, let us go inside the film room.
Let's do it. We do not have an open for this yet.
What?
As Sean complains about everything.
God.
I need a new intro.
Yeah, there we go. That can be the intro moving forward. We'll just have it be Sean going, where's the intro? Why are you making G-bag intros and you're not making intros here? I can't mock Sean this morning or poke fun at him because, of course, he pulled an Elvis, died on the toilet last night, and he is at home in Sunnyvale.
You're going to get some audio?
With bathroom issues. So like I've said all morning, you guys just tweet your thoughts and prayers to him and his bottom this morning. All right, we're out here at 1700 Westlake Bardwell in Ennis for the Sean and RJ Firehouse Tour. And, yeah, let's take a look at these Green Bay Packers. Before I do that, I did see a Packers fan out here a few minutes ago who was very nice, but he did say, like, hey, can you give a shout-out to Big John working at Methodist this morning at the hospital? So shout-out to you, Big John. All right, the Green Bay Packers, this is a team that is really, really good. I have them second in my power rankings still, and I think they're one of the better teams in football. But this is a flawed time with the NFL, and these are flawed teams right now. And the Packers are no different. There are vulnerabilities here. So we're going to go through it. We're going to start off with the offensive side of the ball. Matt LaFleur will do a lot of stuff before the snap to play with the eye discipline. So all that stuff we've seen historically from Ben Johnson and Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan of just, oh, let's move this guy here. Let's move this guy here. Let's try and confuse things before the snap, move guys around. He does a lot of that. And it's usually just something to play with your eyes. Nothing. It doesn't lead to a flea flicker or, whoa, they ran this insane route or look at this crazy concept they're doing. It's usually just to run something very basic out of it. But you're just trying to do a lot to trick it up, make it look, you know, pretty on the outside, yeah, and start messing with guys' discipline.
And that's what I do myself every day.
He is going to put receivers under center. He's going to run the wildcat. He's got a whole bunch of other zany stuff he likes to do in the run game. He likes to run a lot of jet sweeps. He ran back-to-back jet sweeps with 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter against Cleveland last week. Just jet sweeps to Matthew Golden.
How did they work?
They actually got to the, like, third and two. They picked up 4 yards both times.
Okay.
But then they ended up just throwing the interception there on third and two. But this is, at the end of the day, he wants to run the football. I know a lot of people think of the McVay, Shanahan, LaFleur, like, type of coach and think, oh, yeah, they're really forward-thinking and change the game. All of those guys do like running the football in a particular kind of way. And a lot of what the games that he's doing and playing in front of the defense, Matt LaFleur is just trying to get a favorable look in the run game. That's what he's trying to do. So it's not just saying, let's line up the ball and let's run it, and we're going to be in 23 personnel, and we're just going to out-muscle you and, oh, manly, and anything like that. He is trying to run a modern run game that can pick up 8 yards a chunk, and that's the kind of offense that he likes to run. The passing game is a lot of quick strike stuff. So smoke routes, which the smoke route – snap the ball, wide receiver takes a step back, takes a pass, and gets some blocking in front of him. A lot of out routes, a lot of slants, a lot of passes to the backs in the flat. Josh Jacobs will line up at receiver at times and play off of there. But Jordan Love is a big fan of throwing the go ball, which means the safeties better be on their S this week. Because he has thrown – Cleveland did an effective job taking it away from him. He only got to throw one pass over 20 yards in the game. But if you look at what is considered a deep throw in the NFL, which is 20 yards or further, Jordan Love has thrown the second most pass attempts through 3 weeks, and he didn't even throw but one in week three. So that means he was throwing a lot in week one and two, and he's had success with it. He's been one of the more successful deep passers in the NFL. So similar thing to like what you were facing with Russell Wilson a couple weeks ago, of just a guy who knows how to throw the deep ball. So that's going to be a problem.
Yeah, I'll say.
They like to spread the wealth around. No one on the team is even averaging 4 catches per game right now. There is not a single player on the team who is averaging 4 catches per game for 3 weeks.
That's
Tucker Kraft,
that's too
the
much.
Tight end.
They got too many guys.
Tucker Kraft, the tight end, who is one of Aiden's favorite players, our video producer back at the station. Big Green Bay Packers fan, Aiden Butler.
Man, Aiden would like a guy named Tucker.
Yeah. Aiden looks like he could be a Tucker.
Yeah.
Now that I think about it.
Yeah.
But Aiden,
yeah, he could be a Tucker.
But Tucker Kraft is their leading receiver with 11 catches.
Ross could see it. He sees it. he's shaking his head.
11 catches through 3 games is their leading receiver in Tucker Kraft. He's the top target at tight end, but at receiver, Romeo Doubs, Dontavian Wicks, Matthew Golden, who there was a lot of chatter that he could have been the pick for the Cowboys in the first round if they didn't have the board fall the way that they wanted to. Those are all really good options, and they all do different varying things. Doubs and Kraft are the third down targets for Jordan Love. Wicks brings a little bit more electricity. He's a really dynamic player. He's somebody who they like to get the ball in space to do some different things. And then Matthew Golden's the vertical threat and a little bit of a gadget player because, like I said, they'll run the reverses to him or the jet sweeps. The concern this week, you know how last week I was like, I'm terrified, or 2 weeks ago, I was like, I'm terrified what it'll look like if Malik Nabers – with Malik Nabers out there, if the Giants can block things up. And I'm terrified what it'll look like when Roma Dunze can just run free out there. And we've had those issues. This week it's Matthew Golden, who does not have a bunch of stats, but he is a ridiculous burner. Like, the kind of acceleration that he has off the line of scrimmage to be able to get vertical and really stress some of their coverage issues. I'm going to say this. I'll put it on the line, RJ Chappie.
Whoa!
Matthew Golden will have a touchdown of at least 40 yards or longer in this game.
I mean, that's not a hot take. The Cowboys do that all. That's all they give up.
40-yard touchdowns is not a common thing. You know that if you're a betting man and you know the odds, you know that saying
I know the odds
by guaranteeing there will be a 40-yard touchdown is not a small guarantee here.
So I was asking my handicapper this morning.
Mm-hmm.
He was texting me at like 4:30 this morning. Mm-hmm. From Vegas.
What a guy.
I know. He said Cleveland is the best defense in the league by far, especially at home. Green Bay held Detroit to nothing, ran roughshod over the Commanders, and the Cows almost gave up 40 to a guy who doesn't have a job anymore. I don't know how to tell you how this game's going to go. But he did say that the CeeDee Lamb injury does make it only 1 point by the numbers. Right, a 1 point difference. So he had him winning by 7. Now it's 8.
Yeah.
So by the numbers, he goes, but we've all seen how this offense devolves without him. So obviously, the numbers don't bear out his actual impact.
Right.
So if you're going to bet, if you're thinking of taking the Cowboys, remember, yes, CD might not move the betting line more than a point, but the way this team operates, that offense devolves without a key piece. Throw in two guys on the offensive line being injured. And two guys struggling, and this thing could get ugly.
Yeah, and we're about to switch to the defensive side of the ball. You're not going to like what I'm going to have to say about how the Cowboys offense should play over the next few weeks.
But
we'll get to that here in just a second here as we take a look inside the film room at the Green Bay Packers. They design a lot of runs for Jordan Love.
Yeah.
It's not just scrambling. It's designed stuff for him. He will scramble, too, and he will run if necessary. He doesn't look to bail out and get out of there quickly, but, I mean, if he needs to run, he'll go, and he can absolutely hurt them with his legs. So some of the stuff we saw with Jalen Hurts in week one where it's just like, my gosh, he's just scrambling free, they're going to have to watch out for that. The offensive line is not great in pass protection, and when Jordan Love is pressured, he has problems. Like, he is still looks like a young quarterback when pressure gets in his face. So there's a lot of vulnerability on the interior in particular, which means Osa Odighizuwa, Kenny Clark, Matt Eberflus and your scheme that says get the defensive tackles upfield better be this week. This is the week where you need to see the defensive tackle presence show up in the passing game is getting up the A-gap and really stressing things. Elgton Jenkins, who's been a center that a lot of people have liked for the Packers for the last couple of years, he had a hell of a time blocking Malik Collins last week. He couldn't do it. Malik Collins was just consistently wrecking shop, and I don't know if there are Cowboys fans who even knew that Malik Collins was still in the NFL.
I did.
This is, as I said earlier, a very undisciplined football team from a penalties perspective. They are one of the most flagged teams in the league, and there are a number of pre-snap and procedural penalties. That's the problem, is what kind of penalties they are. They're dumb procedural execution penalties. It's not just grabbing a guy with all, you know, pass interference when he runs by you. These are just stupid execution penalties that the Packers have. All right, let's take a look at the defense. This is a really good defensive team overall in the Packers. I absolutely love the guys that they have at linebacker. Edgerrin Cooper, Quay Walker, Isaiah McDuffie. Any one of those guys would be the best linebacker that Dallas would put on the field this weekend. The secondary is really versatile. They've got playmaking ball hawks back there. Xavier McKinney is one of them. What surprised me is, outside of Micah, the lack of a pass rush, especially with a guy like Rashawn Gary who's out there. And they've got Lucas Van Ness who's supposed to be able to rush a little bit. But I suppose it makes sense why they felt they needed to trade for Micah, because when you see it, when it's not Micah, they have had some problems being able to get to the quarterback. Speaking of Micah, he's as good as he always has been.
As he should be.
When you watch him these 3 weeks, he is wrecking shop the way that he always has. Nothing has changed there. It's the same. He's still getting held, it looks like, on every other snap, and it's not getting called. But he's going to be a nightmare on Sunday night. That that is a guy who does not seem to feel any ill effects from the back injury, unlike you, Chop.
I'm definitely getting ill effects. That's for dang sure.
Their corners are a little grabby in coverage. The physicality has gotten them flagged on a couple different instances. And, again, they're bad timed penalties. They've allowed illegal contact on fourth down to, you know, carry a drive over. Mm-hmm. They've had pass interference, defensive holding. They have those sort of things on third and fourth down all the time. There does seem to be a little bit of panic in the secondary, and they lose their discipline a little bit. I think they're a good secondary, and they've got an ability to take the ball away. But, man, they seem to panic in that secondary in big moments on third and fourth down. And the same thing on the offensive line with the false starts and some of the things we've seen, like we talked about earlier. Green Bay is very, very fast on defense, and sometimes it's too fast. They end up playing a little bit out of control. They can start over-pursuing. It's a good week to have Jaden Blue active. In fact, we need to ask Brian Schottenheimer about that at 8:20. Having Jaden Blue active this week.
About
because
Blue?
With no CeeDee Lamb and
you want some speed, right?
Yeah, real playmakers out there. I mean, you've got George Pickens, but George Pickens is like there's a step up now.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a real need for guys who can break the game open and might be able to take advantage of some of this team's aggressiveness, the Green Bay aggressiveness, and be able to get vertical really quickly. And Jaden Blue's a guy who can line up a receiver. He can line up in the backfield. And I've given them a pass for not having him active the first 3 weeks.
Right.
A lot of people have been upset with that and frustrated with it. I understand why they haven't. So it has not bothered me that Jaden Blue hasn't been active. This is the week where you probably need him because even if he's not ready to do all the things in execution that you want and consistency, you need a playmaker. You need somebody else out there with some electricity now that CeeDee Lamb's not there because we've seen, like you said, how the offense can regress. Dallas needs to be really physical in this game. What you see on tape with the Packers is that the more you turn it into a brawl, they wear down and get exhausted. That was really on display against the Browns last Sunday. Cleveland was a very physical team, and by the time that fourth quarter rolled around,
right,
they looked just tired.
Now, let me ask you this. Do most teams crater when they lose a major piece? Or do we crater more?
I mean, anecdotally, I'd just be thinking this over in, like, small instances. I can't think of large data sets. But, I mean, Buffalo was fine when they got rid of Stephon Diggs. I know that. I'm trying to think of other instances of it. Like, I know of guys who have gone out, but obviously I don't remember how it impacted their offense the same way like it did with Dallas. But, yeah, I mean, this is – they need guys to step up. They need guys to make plays. And that's one of the reasons you went and got George Pickens. In theory, this is supposed to be the guy, right, that steps up. Even with that said, and this is the final note here in the Packers film review, the Cowboys probably need to run the football for the next 4 weeks, Chubb. This needs to be a Bill Parcells, Otis Anderson offense.
Well, look, I mean, their best defense is their offense at this point. Like, just control the clock, right?
I don't think they can win this game passing the football without CeeDee Lamb. Maybe you can throw the football and have some success in future weeks against a team like the Jets or Carolina. I don't know. I haven't watched them yet. But in this game, you're not going to be able to. And in general, you've been a good running team so far.
Mm-hmm.
You've been able to run the ball efficiently. And your offensive line, which cannot pass protect very well at all right now, is pretty good in the run game. Terrence Steele and Tyler Guyton are panicking a second after the snap, it looks like, when they're in pass protection. When they're in run concepts, they're bulldozing and clearing guys out of the way without a problem.
Wow.
And it's not been an issue for the offensive line to run block on this. So, to me, this needs to be a run-first ball game from the Cowboys and probably needs to be a run-first offense for the next month.
There's your little film study. Run first. Cover your ears. Cover your eyes. But you know, like, because that's the thing. You're paying $60 million for the quarterback. You would think that you would be a pass-first team, but this defense can't do that. Green Bay can get no more than how many possessions in this game for the Cowboys to win?
Nine.
I'm not counting kneel downs.
Eight or nine.
And mm-hmm. Usually, it's about 11 or 12 is
against
the
this defense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Eight or nine.
Yeah. They held Philly to 8 in week one, for example.
That was their best performance.
Yeah. And that was the game where they kept things the closest. A couple notes before we get to the junk drawer, though, Chop. Deron Bland and Trayvon Diggs, both full participants Thursday at practice. That seems to be trending the right way for the cornerbacks to be healthy. And then we talked about Dak Prescott, George Pickens, the connection that they're going to have. communication's obviously been a problem in the secondary. You hope that's not the case with the offense, especially when you've got a new quarterback and receiver connection. And Dak was talking about this yesterday. George Pickens and Dak Prescott both spoke to the media. And the question was up between both of them, just like, where's the communication at? And Dak was talking about how communication's always an ongoing process of growth. So you're always getting better at things, and there's always things you can fix. But where they're at right now, he likes where they're at. But specifically, he gave this anecdote yesterday. He said, a conversation we just had out there today was one that was needed after a couple of incompletions on a certain ball. Just getting back at it and us having the same mindset of how we're going to attack that route. He's a great player. I told you all that from the time he showed up. These receivers, guys like George, CD, they make it easy for that chemistry to grow. They do their job, and I just talk to them a little bit about what I expect here, what I expect there, and they go make plays. So I'm looking just to continue to build on what we've all only started. And so that's the thing with Pickens. I think the chemistry's been decent between him and Dak so far. He's still clearly learning, where do I put the ball for you? And Pickens is still learning, how do I adjust to the ball that Dak is going to throw? There's still some adjustment period there, and you've seen that, I think, on tape the last 3 weeks.
I had a guy who's from Pittsburgh. I was on Pittsburgh radio.
Well.
And he said to me that in the press box last year, they were at a game, and one of the media members who was at every game said, I could tell you exactly if it's going to be a run or a pass based on George Pickens' body language leaving the huddle.
He's 20 tipping pitches.
21 straight. Correct.
Damn. Tipping pitches.
Correct tips, I guess.
We mentioned earlier this week, but on the Pickens route where he scored in week 3, some Pittsburgh writer quote tweeted the film copy of the touchdown. He goes, this is the most George Pickens touchdown ever. Like, not really trying or carrying on the route because he doesn't think the ball's coming to him. And then when it does, makes a miraculous play. And everybody's like, oh, what a play.
What a play. What a play.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan right now, brought to you by Ford and your North Texas Ford dealers. Ford is the best in Texas. We bring you Dallas Cowboys owner and general manager Jerry Jones. Good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning, guys. It's a great day. Getting ready to go here.
It is a great day, and y'all's quarterback yesterday said something that I thought was really intriguing when he talked about if this game will bring closure to the Micah Parsons trade, and he said, that's something you got to ask Jerry and Micah. To me, the closure happened when the trade happened. Do you still feel like you're seeking any Micah closure? Have you already had it? Will this game bring it to you?
Well, candidly, if closure were an issue, I should have had that discussion with the mirror before I made the trade, or
right.
I was making the trade. Dak's absolutely right. That's when all the drama was gone, is when you decided to make the trade. And, of course, I was very aware that this game would be coming up this Sunday. And so to the extent that this game being here adds to, takes away from, does anything as far as this trade is concerned, doesn't, although it certainly, I knew that we were going to be competing against him pretty quick. Now, let's make no mistake about it. Micah is special, and we all know he is, and he can be disruptive. But we have huge amounts of experience with the anecdotes that we've seen used on us for the last 4 years.
Right.
And while he does make great plays, there is also a way to approach playing against Micah, as we know, because we didn't exactly win the Super Bowl during those years. So bottom line is, when I look at playing him, I think of trying to have him as an advantage when we were playing other teams over the last 4 years. And some plays it looks beautiful, but then other plays, especially running plays, you can wish you'd have had a different formation.
Jerry, then are you hoping that the coaches put a plan together that completely takes Micah out of this game?
No, I'm not hoping that. You can't take Micah out of a game. Okay. That's ridiculous. I mean, not a ridiculous statement. I'm just saying it's a thought. If you have, you think you're going to take him out of the game. But you can play him. And trust me, he was played by teams against us over the last 4 years. We saw it all the time. And so now whether or not we can accomplish that, that remains to be seen. But with being trite, we lost games with Micah.
Right.
And that is a trite statement, but we did.
Now, earlier in the week, you said there would be no tribute video. I think we all understand that. Micah, of course, was asked about it, and he said he understood it as well. But there was something he said at the beginning of that statement that fascinated me. He said, there are a lot of things, this is Micah speaking, there are a lot of things that I could consider disrespectful throughout this process, but I wouldn't say the lack of a tribute video is one of them. Do you feel like anything disrespectful took place in this negotiating process?
Not at all. Not at all. I regret if he thinks there was to him, but I didn't get that feeling in any way during any of this deliberation. And it went on for quite a while, as we all know, but it went on beyond the stuff at training camp. And so that just is not the case that it was meant to be. In terms of the sensitivity of it, I understood that from the very beginning, and this was significant to all parties concerned, significant to Micah. Those feelings are always highly sensitive in that setup, and that's not to say that you aren't sensitive to somebody that just does that three or four times in their career. I do, but I've done it hundreds of times, literally.
Jerry, you frequently brought up rivalry, my city against your city, and how much you love that part of it. And this Sunday night has a lot of potential to be kind of maybe a split stadium, because the Packers fans do travel well. Do you anticipate or expect Cowboys fans to have louder boos or louder cheers whenever they see Mike on the field?
Well, I think, we've had numerous double handfuls of players that have returned to play for us. And players that have been with us a lot longer than Micah was.
Mm-hmm.
Micah, of course, to remind everybody, was here 4 years. Some of the players that we use the stories about returning to us were with us much longer than that. And I don't think that this situation calls for a recognition. Micah's just getting started in his career, and at the end of the day, the Cowboys will have been a part of it, the initial starting of it.
Now, fun little, I guess hopefully fun business question for you. Micah said that he was going to have lots of family members in his suite because he bought it before he got traded and he couldn't get a refund once he was traded. Is that right?
Well, I don't know about that. We don't. We have quite a list of people regarding using suites out there. But I know one time his mother, who I know how precious she is to him, wasn't in that suite, and it was at our last preseason game. She was in mine, and we were sitting up there. Actually, she was in my perch up there that we watched the games from, not the actual suite. And she sat there with us all through the first half and sat there with me and discussed the contract and discussed our thoughts and her thoughts about it. So he certainly has some members of his family know where our suites are.
Jerry, this really is just one game, but the team is 1-2. We've had a couple of poor performances in a couple of different areas. How important is a win this Sunday night?
Well, of every game at this juncture, especially coming off of the disappointment that we had in Chicago, I'm going to say this again. Frankly, when we went into the second half, I can't tell you how much I thought we were going to win that game because we'd had their offense out there, the entire defense out there, so much in the first half, and I just knew we'd gotten to their legs. And that's a very strategic point. But to their credit, they stepped out there and kept that ball for almost 10 minutes, I think, of in the first half after we gave up possession of it to start the second half, I mean. So my point is, everybody that really follows it understands that. But that was a real surprise. And so, yes, I'd like to think that that's not the way it's going to be. Certainly, we've been making the corrections this week, and it was very clear where we broke down and where we didn't follow the basic assignments that you have to keep the big plays from happening. And hopefully we will have reviewed that, and we can play better than that. We practice a lot better than that, and we have played better than that, where everybody's got a man, cover it. Now, the defense was designed to let some shorter completions happen, but not those big plays. So hopefully we've corrected that. We have had a good week of practice.
Yeah, and I think we are all hopeful, too, that that defense can right the ship there. With what we've seen so far from it, though, how much do you feel this season's going to hinge on Dak's arm and his ability to put up points?
A lot. I think a lot. Mm. And that's no secret, and not that I'm thinking you're saying it is. No, we depend on good quarterback play. That's the plan. And we've had it, frankly, I think, at if I just gave an overall grade this year, I think we've had good quarterback play. I think some other things have stood in the way of keeping us from having a better record.
Now, some of that, especially offensively, you can attribute to now the injury to CeeDee Lamb, injuries to the offensive line. But I wanted to focus on George Pickens. I know he not only wants to contribute for the Cowboys, he would like to show everyone he can be a number one wide receiver. How important are these next few weeks for George Pickens?
For us, and I know that's what you mean, but it's for us, a receiver of his caliber is a number one receiver. And so, yes, if he can come in and play to that, and which he's very capable, and I know that Dak has that kind of confidence in him, which you need between the quarterback and receiver. He's capable of playing to that level, and we sure are going to design it to that level.
Jerry, we were told yesterday, we had a report that Deron Bland is going to play. He said, yes, I'm absolutely going to play. How much will it help having him out on the field?
It has been a tremendous problem for us for him not to be out on the field. So it will remedy that. And he's someone that is extraordinarily consistent as well as capable of making big plays. There's a difference. And we must have consistency, or which is another way in my vernacular of saying soundness in what we're doing. You first go there, and then if you're in position, you make a big play. And so the thinking about it otherwise breaks the secondary down, and we've seen examples of that.
Well, you know, kind of speaking of that, the idea of consistency and making extraordinary plays, we've seen throughout the years Trayvon Diggs make a lot of extraordinary plays, but the consistency seems to have been a struggle so far this year. Do you attribute that strictly to the injury or and coming back from that, or do you have to kind of take a look at he feels like a diminished player so far this year?
Well, I think one thing about the secondary, you've heard it all our lives, you're on an island out there, boy, and when it's coming at you, it's you and not the rest. So he is on an island, and but not just him. He's got to count on and have consistency or have everybody doing what the play calls for. They first have to recognize what's happening. and that's a key. And once they recognize it, all of them have been lined up, should have been, in position to be where they're supposed to be after they recognize the play. When you don't do that, you get the kind of stuff that happened to us last couple of weeks with New York and certainly there with Chicago. We can improve on that. That is an area that is focus. That is work. That is concentration. That is just being understanding that is number one, your responsibility. And it's critical the way we're playing the secondary to accept the fact that you first have to recognize where you're supposed to be at the time you're supposed to be there and then go from there on the play.
You know, Jerry, in all the years we've done this, you know, we like to joke around. We talk a lot of heavy sports also, but we also have some big human moments. And I saw yesterday, this week, the Cowboys had they honored some cancer survivors this week. And I was wondering that, you know, they got to go meet the players and say hi and everything. Does that hit home a little more with you than it ever has before?
Well, yes, but I will tell you, so often, it seems as though young people are a part of that. Mm-hmm. And now, frankly, that's an elevated feeling about the challenge of cancer. And that seems so unfair. But it's very real. And I will probably, my having experienced personally cancer, probably the thing that is the greatest elevator or positive for me is I have focused in on the treatment and the advances in the treatment of cancer since maybe I've been a little more focused than I would have been. That, to me, translates to those kids and those young people. And, you know, usually the parents are just young people.
For sure.
And so it really is a double whammy. And I can say this because I have zeroed in on it more than I normally would have, I'm sure. And boy, are we making great advancement in the treatment of cancer. And in so many cases, it's just not a terminal thing anymore and getting better. So that's one of the great things about at least living in these times.
Now, one of the other things we love about talking with you is you can give us big picture NFL thoughts and business breakdowns. The word was coming around this week that the NFL might be in a position to renegotiate its media contracts. I was kind of hoping you could walk us through the mechanisms in that contract to perhaps set up these renegotiations.
Well, it's a pretty simple concept. It's just that you make a 7-year or you make an extended contract, but one of the parties have the right to renegotiate. And of course it's a party that has some leverage, and it's normally not done with both of them because that pretty much mitigates the value of the piece of paper if both of them have the right. But in our particular case, thanks to the great fans that we have and interest that we have in the game, we're able to renegotiate our contracts at a earlier date than the length of the contract. So with that in mind, that's what you're seeing. And we will have in a couple of years the right to go in and renegotiate the contracts. And everybody has always understood that. It's not a negative in that sense, but it's a strategic one and one that lets us keep doing. You know, the whole philosophy is get as much of the games, get as much of the NFL out here as you can, free. Mm-hmm. What is free? Free is, in my mind, where the advertising is really the economic support of the presentation of the game or the story. And that's what we are. I'm so proud of that because no entity or no sport, or certainly I don't know of any business that's done a better job of exposing and getting our games and stories about the NFL available to the mass than the NFL has. And that's probably the best thing we've done, period.
Then why do you think the rumors about Amazon Prime Video getting potentially in the future a Super Bowl? Because that is not a broadcast TV free entity.
Yeah, and again, let's you asked the question, mm-hmm. and so I'm not going to try to make sense of or rationalize, because I first of all don't know what context is put in, and that's not you. It's just generally it's a rumor. And when you have rumors, if you try to answer all rumors, you would come up with a distortion of what it is.
Yeah.
And those are just conversations.
Well, and I'm kind of curious, Jerry, from your own personal perspective and from the league's perspective, where they position themselves, how valuable of an asset is the NFL to broadcast media groups?
Well, I think that... I'll go as far back as Rupert Murdoch and Fox when they came into the league. And, I was just frankly taken back but so buoyed by the fact that he wanted to come in and to initiate his network, because he didn't cover but about 80-something% of the United States. He didn't fully cover the United States. Fox didn't. And he, quote, had no Maddens and he had no talent, but he felt that the NFL itself, if he could get it, it could create relationships with other owned and operated stations like we have here in Dallas.
Right.
Or he could actually go out and buy key stations. He built a network. And really, when it dawned on me what that had happened and where he was going with his plan, I really gained a tremendous knowledge about how to lever the NFL. And in a way, he showed us that with the way he built Fox. And those things are parts of them are true today, and the same leverage is there. The leverage created that much more viewership, as it turned out, and it beget even a better universe, so to speak. So bottom line is that I will tell you, so much of it has been just good timing, the time of the world that we're in, our game, and its ability to have the breaks it has, being focused, the time of year it has. And then I'll be very candid with you. I learned something very early on. Nothing wrong with a little conflict. Nothing wrong with a little off the field type interest in what goes on the game. That just adds a little salt and pepper to it.
Every now and again, does Murdoch still give you a call or send you a thank you note?
Well, I yes, and I certainly do him. And boy, I'll tell you guys, I've had such a great experience. Really, I used it a lot, older, experienced people advising me. And I'd look them up. Well, I'd read about them in the paper, and I'd call them and look them up and go see them. And I did that, and I didn't know them. And then I also had people that were obvious. And to be around George Steinbrenner, to be around those guys, oh, they weren't perfect. And I don't mean to say that behind George Steinbrenner. I can say it behind anybody. But they weren't perfect. But I will tell you this right now. Every little thing you gain from knowing those guys, listening to the way they look at it, listen to their approach, that's called standing on other people's shoulders. And I really never met anybody that did anything that didn't stand on a lot of people's shoulders.
Well, we appreciate the time. As always, good sir.
Thanks, guys.
Best of luck against Green Bay. We'll see you next week. There you go,
well,
Jerry.
I'm so excited about this. I'm so excited. I hope our fans are. Man, don't think we can't get them. We can get them here. Let's go.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Ooh, we can get them here. I like that, Jerry Jones, right here on 105.3 The Fan.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. We're live at Taco Bueno in Arlington. 5748 Southwest Green Oaks. As you can tell, we need you out here to make sure everyone knows when to start clapping. All right, here's the cue. When I say we're live at Taco Bueno, that's when you clap. Let's try this one more time.
Okay, all right.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. We are live from Taco Bueno in Arlington. Hey, and if you think he can figure that out on the first try, come on down. If you're thinking I can't figure it out until the second try, well, you'll still fit right in here with this motley crew. 5748 Southwest Green Oaks, Taco Bueno in Arlington. Still got giveaways happening. Delicious Taco Bueno food that we need to get to some to Alec and, of course, us. And right now, we do Cowboys win because Cowboys lose because 877-881-1053. Frankel, injury attorney, text line, or the Twitch, or the YouTube. Corey, I'm concerned that a lot of these are going to be like Cowboys win because the Green Bay bus crashes or something.
Oh, no.
Really terrible.
We don't wish anything like that upon
no,
anybody.
I don't want it to happen. I'm right. worried that that's what people are going to text in, that that's the only way that the Cowboys can win this game. I came up with another way.
All right.
Cowboys win because the Packers destroy themselves with penalties. Now, you go back to that Cleveland game. The Packers were flagged 14 times. Take a step back to the Washington game before that, and I know they won that game, but they were flagged 10 times against Washington. So just in the last two games, 24 flags. And look at the very last game that they had. Final possession of the first half. They had driven from their own 12-yard to the Cleveland 38. Then what happens? You have a false start for the Packers. Then you give up a sack. Then you have an illegal block in the back. And then another sack. And then the half's over. And you don't score any more points. And it's easy to look back at that now and think about how vital that could have been to maybe get an earlier start on putting that game away. So I think you can win if the Packers continue their trend of really shooting themselves in the foot with penalties.
Cowboys win. And if they do, Kevin, you get a free taco the day after a Cowboys win here at Taco Bueno, the official taco of the Dallas Cowboys. Mm. So don't forget that if the Cowboys do win. I say Cowboys win because they the Packers stupidly try to establish the run.
And I would love that.
They're like, hey, we're going to run the football. And the Cowboys are like, you're not really. And then they never change their mind and say, we have to start throwing the ball. It would not make any sense, Kevin, to try to establish the run against the Cowboys right now. You're just going to keep the game close for yourself, and that's unnecessary if you're playing against them.
Until they can prove they can cover anybody.
Yeah, so I think that Matt LaFleur really does want to run the ball. Josh Jacobs has had a little lack of success where they wanted to because they've been throwing the ball a lot too, and so I think that he's going to be like, I'm going to do this a lot, and it's going to work into the Cowboys' favor. And now, here's the other thing, though, Kevin. We need a halftime swing something bad. This team, and this goes back for years now, does not get the advantage of the halftime swing.
Yeah.
They can't score before, they can't execute the score before the first half. They even had time. They had plenty of opportunities in the last two games to do that and then do the same thing, having the ball coming out of the second half, and they have not capitalized on that. So I think it's going to be because the Packers are like, well, we're going to run the ball early in the game, and then halftime adjustments turn it over a different way. But if they stupidly try to just establish the run the entire game, the Cowboys benefit.
Now, there is some,
because that shortens the game for the Cowboys, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're in the inferior team, that's what you, in theory, that's what you want to do, is shorten the game. Some daily fantasy-based ways of saying this from the 214. The Cowboys win because underdog says plus 257 on that.
Okay.
By the way, that's a new feature, is you can do that on underdog by
making
plays on games and the teams. And then from the 214, I'm afraid this might be right. Cowboys win because because they win the turnover battle 5-1. This does kind of feel like a game in which you need to win the turnover battle by multiple turnovers if you're going to win the game. And then for the 8-1-7, the Cowboys could win if Jordan Love had them on the money line and threw the game. Now, hopefully he makes far more money from playing NFL football than that, but you never know. Alec, do you have a Cowboys win because we might need them?
Cowboys win because they do what they finally said they have the ability to do after they traded Micah Parsons. They scheme up pressure, and they finally get home, and they finally get to the quarterback, because I heard you guys talking about it a little bit throughout the week, and you saw it in the loss to Cleveland for Green Bay, that
yes.
Cleveland obviously has one of the, if not the best defense in the NFL, so you got to give them credit there, but when they were able to force pressure towards Jordan Love, they scored less points. It's pretty simple math, and Jordan Love looked like he was off his schedule a little bit. His timing was off, and you know, we joke that sometimes Jordan Love does like being off schedule, but that was more of a last year thing for him. This year, he looks like he likes to plant his feet. He likes to have his rhythm. He likes to have his progressions and get the ball out of his hands on his own accord. If you're able to get home and just get him off schedule, you don't even have to take him to the ground every single time you get pressure. If you can just get him off schedule, then you have a chance to mitigate their scoring.
And your best way to do that is with, obviously, with your two best defensive players, and that's in the middle right now.
Yeah.
And that's their weakest area, I think, for the Packers offense. If you watch that game against Washington, they attacked that middle part of the Packers offense, and they had some luck there, or some good production in that area. Kenny Clark, you know, he wants to ball out, right? He wants to be like, hey, no, this was definitely the Kenny Clark trade. That's how he wants to see it, and Osa's going to be there for an opportunity too. And Kevin, one of the things that this defense really wants to do a lot more of and be good at is twists and stunts,
right,
games that
right,
you can do in the middle right. of the defense. As Raku's kind of struggled getting out on the edge and doing a lot of work there, I wonder if they can play some games with that and get some more pressure there.
Now, I'm intrigued by this answer from the 214. Cowboys win because you fall asleep before the game starts. Does that mean it's all a dream that the Cowboys won? And then one more ridiculous one.
Is dream scenario always a sellout to you whenever it's like a TV show or movie or something? Or are you always like, no, that was a good dream sequence?
It depends, because like at the end of the Bob Newhart show, if it's like a comedy, I can live with that. But
was Atlanta that way? Was it always a dream for him?
Man, I watched all of Atlanta and I understood a lot of it, but I felt like there was a lot I did not understand. But I still liked it. From the 469, Cowboys win because it's revealed Micah was traded to Green Bay to throw the game for Dallas, and Jerry and Micah were on the same page the whole time, like a WWE plot twist.
I love it.
Cowboys
win. ESPN is reporting more on WWE.
Fact.
So.
Dallas wins because they draw 8+ pass interference penalties. Man, I would
do it.
I would hope you win
every
that game.
Every time, just throw deep to George Pickens and see if you can get a flag. It doesn't have to be a catch.
Now, nothing revolutionary here, but I've got numbers to really hammer this home. The Cowboys lose because, well, they still can't cover. Now, think about this. Going back to the Bears game. 22 of Caleb Williams' 28 passing attempts, his wide receivers had 3 yards or more of separation. That is a massive number in the NFL, and it was 22 out of 28 times. All 4 of his touchdowns were on targets where the receivers had more than 3 yards of separation. Now consider this. The last 2 weeks alone, the Cowboys have given up 12 passing plays of 25 yards or more.
Okay.
That's 6 a game. Last year, they gave up 1.9 per game.
Okay.
We've essentially jumped from 2 of those plays a game to 6.
Yeah, that's definitely a drastic change there for sure.
So, not hard to believe that I think that is the reason they could lose.
I think the Cowboys lose because they can't find a second receiving option. Now, when I say that, you're like, yeah, of course. Who's going to be the second receiving option behind Pickens? No, that's not what I'm saying. Who's the second receiving option behind Jake Ferguson? Because the way that the people are playing against the Cowboys, and one of the best ways to beat Dak Prescott is just to play lots of too high and force him to pick something underneath. because Dak Prescott does not love to go deep whenever he has two high safeties. He loves whenever he sees single high. But a lot of these times they say, we're going to shell coverage, and Dak, good luck. You cannot complete enough passes. Your offensive line can't hold up enough. Y'all can't be disciplined enough underneath to drive 80 yards down the field and score a touchdown over and over and over. Y'all want big plays. We're not going to let it happen. So somebody, Jake Ferguson was the benefactor last week, because the Bears said exactly that, and Jake Ferguson had, what, 13 targets and 11
13 catches.
13 catches on 15 targets. And so, like, that's what Dak's favorite option is underneath. If teams are going to do that, Schottenheimer's got to come up with different plans for Dak to get other receivers involved in the game. And so Pickens has to be the better receiving option than Ferguson as the second receiver. But also Tolbert has to do something. Flannoy and I would love to see if they can get Turpin more space and more opportunities to have big plays.
I would be inclined to agree with that as well. From the 940, Cowboys lose because they have Jerry Jones as the GM and are not good. From the 254,
that is true.
Cowboys lose because the offensive line will fold like a fresh towel. From the 254, Cowboys lose because Micah goes crazy and gets three sacks. You know, I know we probably haven't talked about that specific aspect of it as much as other media entities this week, but it is early in the season, and this does feel like a game that Micah cares like disproportionately about and really wants to make the Cowboys pay. Now, I don't know if that will happen when the game's still on the line or if it would happen like when the game is out of hand, because that is where he really does excel at picking up a lot of stuff when the game's over.
Oh, he'll definitely hunt one late if he doesn't have one already. I think the terrifying thing is if he has two early in the game, he's going to start believing, man, I can get whenever I want to.
Yeah.
And that could turn into a big snowball effect because of what he would like to do at the end of the game, and that's pick up extras.
Alec, do you have a specific thing you want to throw out there for why the Cowboys will lose this game?
Cowboys lose because, gentlemen, they rely too much on the run game if it is not even working. So if you look at some of the metrics through just a few games for the Packers, that defense is really good. And even after trading away Kenny Clark, they're still among the league's best in stopping the run and yards per carry allowed. They're third in team total defense. They're really, really good defensively. And I feel like the Cowboys, that is, are really confident offensively that they can run the ball. So maybe they rely on it a little bit too much when it matters too much, and they're not moving the ball in the way that they think. They get forced into passing situations that are too obvious, and that secondary has been playing pretty well for Green Bay as well. They don't have the household names that you're going to mention when it comes to corners and safeties, but that defense seems to know what they're doing at least, which we can't really say here in Dallas through three games. They communicate, they execute, they do all the words that we wish we could say here. Everything looks clean. If they run the ball too much and they think it's going to break through one of these times, right, and they're forced into third and long passing situations, they have no shot.
Kevin, two notes from the Brian Schottenheimer press conference today. One, regarding Jadeveon Clowney and how much he'll play. I hope a lot. He's had a good week of practice. He's very excited. We'll be smart with him. So that's an update on that. And then, would you stop everything if Roger Staubach walked into the room?
Yeah. Did he do that in the press conference?
He walked into the press conference. Brian Schottenheimer.
He didn't walk into the Taco Boy. No, like, I'm sorry. God. People were looking around, but you know, we are in Arlington, so 5748 Southwest Green Oaks, but I guess he was probably in
Roger,
Frisco.
You're always welcome.
Yeah, if you want to come out welcome. To the Taco Bueno. We got plenty of people here, though, by a party box.
Schottenheimer stopped down and said, oh, my goodness gracious, I will stop what I'm doing for this. And Roger said, this is my favorite coach. And then Shotty said, you look good. And he said, I can still throw. I'm such a Cowboys fan. I'm for you. He said, I appreciate that. It's great seeing you. He said, I still love the Cowboys. It's amazing how when I sit down and watch the Cowboys game, I feel like I'm out there. Right now we're okay, but we're going to get better. No doubt. That's the plan. So there you go. That's Roger Staubach in your face. You don't believe him. I don't think you believe in Roger Staubach.
I do.
That's disappointing, Kevin.
What do you mean?
He was the first ever guest on the KNC Masterpiece. He essentially got us a radio show.
What makes you say? Actually, that probably
that is
true.
Yeah, that's true.
Because at first, if you didn't know this about us, we were told that we were going to get 3 tryout shows. And then after the first show, they called us into the office. And I thought for sure it was because we were getting fired, because they were like, this show sucks.
We hadn't even been hired yet.
Yeah, and so they were like, we only needed 1 week to make the decision, mm-hmm. which really kind of hurt my feelings. But luckily, that was not the case.
Their big question
whatsoever.
Was, how did you get Roger Staubach on the show?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Absolutely. So, yes, thank you, Roger, for getting this
He still
done.
Believes, Kevin.
Hey, I still believe he would be an upgraded quarterback in New Orleans. So if he wants to go down that route, he could.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, 2-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
And it's time for our weekly conversation with Stephen Jones here on your home of the Cowboys. And good afternoon, sir. How the heck are you?
Good afternoon, guys.
Hey, first question here, Stephen. It's kind of unbelievable looking back on this rivalry. Green Bay's won 9 of 10 in the series and some close calls along the way. Is this the team or the rivalry you most want to get right against going into Sunday Night Football?
Well, obviously, every game is so important, and don't get me wrong, the division games probably come first, but, when you get to games like San Francisco and Green Bay, especially, the experiences we've had over the last 10 years, we need to get those right, and certainly Green Bay's right at the top of the list. Hats off to them. They're a great organization. They do things the right way. They've had really great players from the Brett Favre to their right on down the line. And again, obviously, we get an opportunity here Sunday.
How confident are you in defensive adjustments after the last couple of games?
I'm confident. We just met with the staff, and I think they've done a good job this week of, doing a lot of different things in terms of, how we can execute better. We've got to do a better job. We're not getting the job done there, and they know it. Our players know it. Our staff knows it, and I think they've done a great job this week of, really doing some things that I think will make it easier for our guys to execute and play and play at a high level.
How surprised have you been by the lack of production, really, from the edge group so far? I know we'd been talking about that this week. We thought you guys actually had a number of guys to kind of piece together a solid producing unit.
Yeah, I think it's more than, I think at the end of the day, it's the execution. And we've got to go out and execute the things that we do best. We can certainly help that with pressure. I do have a lot of confidence in our players. Obviously, we did bring in Jadeveon Clowney, and I think he'll bring something to the to our defensive unit as well. But I do think things are going to get better because, as I said, this was a group we had a lot of confidence going into last year. We had a lot of injuries, but now we've got them all back and healthy, and just feel like we're going to get better as the season goes. But we also got to execute the defense, and certainly that starts with our coaching staff. Getting those players prepared, and then the players got to go out and execute and make the plays they need to make so that we can get off the field. Third down's a big, it's been a big problem for us so far this year, and certainly you know, giving up the explosives is just not something, you know, that you can live with. We've got to cut those out, and certainly it starts on Sunday.
What are the expectations for Clowney making his Cowboys debut?
Yeah, we're going to use him. Certainly he'll get, 15 to 25 snaps. We'll see how he's feeling as the game goes. And as you said, we've got a good group there to keep them fresh and hopefully keep them with their ears pinned back and playing good football.
With De'Ron Bland getting set to return, what does that do to the secondary? Is that, does Reddy Stewart still keep that nickel spot, or does Bland kind of get that versatility factor continuing?
Well, I think we'll see Bland more outside. I think Reddy's doing a good job for us. Certainly, we also got Kyrie and certainly Diggs. So we've got a good group there. We've just got to go out and execute the coverages and do the things that it takes to play winning defense.
Steven, you've seen a lot of football through your career, and I know you ask questions of the staff and stuff. You came on our station and talked about Flus can manufacture pressure. Has he told you why they haven't been able to manufacture pressure?
Yeah, I think the bigger thing is we've been, because we're a little short in some areas in coverage, we've kind of not been doing a lot other than just sending forward. And, I think, we're saying that we're probably going to change some of that, and we'll see how it goes on Sunday. But, yeah, we've talked about it extensively and, how we're going to do better. Certainly, when you get pressure, it helps the back end. And, we know we're going to have to make some plays and if we want to get off the field and stop the explosives.
Steven Jones here with you on 105.3 The Fan. A touchdown at home is a big number in the NFL. We've been talking about, what's the path to victory look like? What do you think needs to happen here to get an upset against Green Bay?
Well, I think we got to start with what we've been preaching really since the time Shotty walked in the door. We got to start with running the football, patrolling the football, and then playing complimentary football, stop the run. And, the key is, which we haven't done, and we've got to stop the explosives and we've got to get the ball. The other thing we've got to do better on offense is we've got to protect the ball. You're not going to win many games in the NFL losing the turnover battle 4-0. That's just not sound. And we've got to protect the ball better offensively, and we've got to get the ball, which we hadn't done a good job of this year as well.
How's it changed without CeeDee Lamb here for a couple weeks?
Well, anytime you're missing one of the best wide receivers in football, you're going to feel it. But the great news is we've got weapons. And like I said, it starts with running the football. But Jake Ferguson did a great job. I think he tallied 13 catches. Certainly, I think George Pickens is going to – I think at first it was a little shell shock to not have his running mate there in CD. But he's had a great week of practice. And then you throw in Turpin and – JT and I think Flo will go out and do a nice job. We've got the weapons to move the football and think we will. We just, as we said, we got to protect the ball. And I think obviously it was unfortunate with Javonte on the first turnover, which was in scoring position. Of course, we threw two picks in the end zone, which would have been points. So we just got to do a better job all the way around of protecting the ball and protect it and then get the ball in the end zone.
Steven, how critical are these few games without CD in terms of the evaluation for George Pickens and sort of his future here?
Yeah, I mean, George is a great football player, and I know he'll step up and do a good job for us. We're worried about game to game, and certainly we're great. It's great that we've got George. I think Turpin's done even better than most expected in terms of his explosiveness and what he can do for our offense. Obviously, Javonte Williams has stepped up. But we got to just take each week by week, and focus on that, and certainly starts with the Packers on Sunday.
Were you able to dodge the IR for both CeeDee Lamb and Tyler Booker?
We'll make that final decision when we get him out of the boot next week and see kind of what we think the prognosis is. Short end or long end of how long we think it'll take for him to get back.
Steven, your right tackle has really, really benefited from having Booker in there playing next to him, and especially in the running game stuff. The confidence level in Bass that he and Steele can continue to give you that presence, that physical presence on that right side, plus what you've been able to do with Span Ford over there.
Yeah, I feel very comfortable that that Bass is going to go in there and do a great job. And, you know, strongest part of Steele's game is his run blocking.
Yes, yeah.
And he'll continue to work at his pass blocking part, but he really comes off the ball great. Been used to doing it with Zach Martin, certainly was enjoying having Tyler Booker in there. But I think Bass will go in there and do a really nice job.
Steven Jones with us here on the Fan News today. The NFL's looking at a bunch of games in Brazil. Do we need to be making plans for Rio here in the not-too-distant future?
It sounds like a good trip, but we'll kind of see where it goes. But I've been to Brazil before, and it's a great place to go, and I'm sure it'd be a great experience to play a football game down there. But we'll kind of see how it goes as we move forward with the league.
Jerry on the Fan this morning asked about Micah, said some plays it looks beautiful, other plays, especially running plays, you wish you had a different formation. So to be trite, we lost games with Micah. Do you ever go like, Dad, he doesn't need any more motivation. They're coming in pretty hot here.
Well, we're worried about it. The Green Bay Packers have one hell of a defense.
Yeah,
they got great team speed. They obviously have great defensive ends. Their linebackers can run. They jump off the tape at you. They're a damn good defense. We've got to worry about the Packers, period. And whether it's their defense or whether it's their offense, they got obviously a great quarterback. Their receivers run great routes. And we've got our work cut out for us.
Steven, how close are we to a Jaden Blue debut?
Well, we'll just go week by week right now. Obviously, our running backs are doing a nice job. And so it's hard right now for Jaden to break in when you got two veteran running backs really doing a nice job running the football like they did last week. But all those things come around at the right times. And I know Jaden will be ready when his opportunity comes. And we've seen a lot of things from Jaden that we're looking forward to seeing in a ballgame.
Thank you for your time, Steven. Enjoy the rest of your Friday and give him hell Sunday night. We'll be pulling for you.
Appreciate you guys. Great being on. Thank
there
you.
There he goes. Thank you, sir. Steven Jones here with you on 105.3 The Fan, sending you into the weekend every Friday here in the G-Bag Nation. Yeah, buddy, welcome back. It's the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. Monster game coming up with the Packers. You know, I think this is a chance to reverse course, to correct your trends, to show that what happened against the Giants and Bears was preventable, and that we can get everybody on the same page. And how amazing would it be to be broadcasting Monday at 2-2 with the Panthers and Jets coming up in back-to-back weeks? Let's do a deep dive on how possible it is for the Cowboys offense to have success against this Packers defense with Brian Broaddus and Krusty's Corner. It's brought to you by Reliant Air Conditioning, gimmick-free AC repair and replacement.
Hey, kids! Your old pal Krusty's going to teach you 5 new words.
You're not wrong about that.
From Dallas, Texas, number 55, Brian.
Thank you much for playing that, Lucius. Thank you to Dawson, Bobby, Chief. Appreciate you putting that thing together. Thank you to Reliant as well for being a part of this. All right, guys. This thing ain't all about Micah Parsons, man. They got some ball players on the side of this defense.
Do they now?
They do. And it's really going to be about how well can you handle what they throw at you. And I'm not saying throw at you from a blitz standpoint. I'm just saying, are you ready to play against a defense that will rush four and the linebackers do a good job of getting downhill and playing the run? When you talk about Walker and Cooper.
Yeah, Walker is a big hitter.
Yeah.
I freaking wanted Cooper, man, when they traded Micah. Why didn't we get that guy?
It is, that would have been a nice get.
Kenny Clark's been pretty damn good, though.
They're
their best defensive player.
I don't disagree.
Get them both.
I kind of feel like, though, this secondary, it's kind of the no-name group. When you start to really dive in, there's not really a superstar player. Xavier McKinney at safety, I think, is pretty good. But Evan Williams, who plays free safety, I just think he is okay. And I'm not going to sit there and say they're really great at safety, but I will say McKinney does have my respect.
They don't have a lot of work to do often.
Yeah, Nixon and Hobbs are the corners with Bullard as the nickel. And so, yeah.
Javon Bullard.
And we'll see every once in a while, too. Yeah, you'll see Valentine in there as well, number 24. But it's a secondary. It's really kind of feasted benefited because of how good the front is. And I say the front, I'm talking about their ability to rush the passer. They've got several edges that can rotate. The things that people have done, Micah didn't play as much in the Detroit game opening day, but he did play quite a bit against the Commanders, and he did play quite a bit against the Browns. I think against the Browns, he was playing hurt. His back was kind of acting up on him. There were a couple of times where they were chipping him. And, you know, sometimes Micah takes some funny hits when they chip him.
Yeah.
And you could tell his back. It was like he was running, and he all of a sudden that just quick stop because somebody hit him, and then it kind of jolts him a little bit.
Let's get him to take a knee a couple times.
Yeah, he pulled himself out of a couple of, but their pass rush with Gary and Parsons.
I was impressed with Van Ness against
Van
Cleveland.
Ness. Yeah,
Van Ness played really well.
See, and talking to my guys in Green Bay about Van Ness, they were thinking, even before the season, they were thinking that Van Ness, it's kind of that, you know, in the media and stuff when it's like, oh, this guy's breakout. This is going to be a breakout guy. This breakout guy. They were really, really talking him up that, like, he was going to make that jump. I mean, he was a first-round pick in 2023, and they've kind of been waiting for him to do that. But everybody in Green Bay thought this would be the year, and then, boom, what do? They go trade for Micah Parsons. So now they've got some legitimate, the pass rush guys to do
he
that.
He looks the part.
Yeah.
I think Rashawn Gary has benefited the most. I think Gary's got 4.5 sacks right now.
Yeah, Gary's a very explosive player, and when we watch these players that the way that they come off the ball, and it's like they gain so much ground on that first step.
Yeah.
So like he's on the corner, and then he's working to get around.
Making it so tough to get hands on him.
Oh no,
linemen.
It's crazy. You know, the really good pass rushers have that ability to gain a lot of ground and get right on that blocker and get to the corner, and then either dip it or just push you back. And Gary's got that. He's got that explosive step. Him, Parsons, we all know about Parsons and stuff like that. I'm interested to see what happens with Wyatt, the defensive tackle. He's a little bit nicked up right now. So their defensive tackle, him and Carl Brooks, are the two inside guys. And I feel like they're pretty good players, but it's the ends, it's the linebackers, and it's really the one safety. I mentioned about the cloud coverage. Talking about cloud, it's that look where you kind of, you know, you can play two deep out of it, and then you play the corner back and the safety down. And so keep an eye on that. You know, sometimes Dak loses track of where guys are. They're going to try and fool him with this cloud coverage, which they play about 36% of the time. You could see it on tape where, you know, usually the corners, you know, the corner's got that, you know, he's playing short and then the safety's playing back. Well, the cloud, they flip it to try and make you give it just a little bit of a different look. You're going to get zone about 80% of the time against these guys. They're going to play a lot of cover three. That's really that's the single high with the two corners. Four-man rush is really what is their biggest thing. And they're going to blitz. Their big blitz down when they do blitz is going to be the third down. That's right around 32% is what the metrics say there. So that's kind of where their defense is at. The running aspect of this defense, like I say, I'm going to do things to try and take the ball at Micah Parsons in this one. And Dawson, like we talked about yesterday, when he's the backside, I'm going to try my best to be able to kind of try and take him out of the game with blocks, just continually chip him during the game. If you're going away from him, put a guy on him. If it's at him, put a guy on him. just make him have to defend blocks the whole day. I would go, I'd hit him high, and I'd hit him down low. I'd try and cut him, make him play with his hands down. That will slow him up a little bit. We've seen some teams do that to him before, where he'll come around the end, and then they try and cut him, and now he's very mindful of like, oh, wait a minute. I could get, you know, if I come flying around that corner, I could get cut by somebody. So I would make sure that I do stuff like that in this football.
A lot
game.
Of span forward on him, maybe even some Hunter Lipke making his money.
To me, if you take the ball at him, it's try, you know, tie it in with the tackle, try and push him, just try and push him, and then make him have to come off with his sore back. Make him have to come off and try and reach a block as he's reach for a tackle. As he's playing the block, that be a way to kind of get him out of there. But nobody, like I say, they're the 30th ranked team in the NFL with rushing attempts against them. They get teams that get behind in games, and they just have to throw the football. I'll be interested to see if Dallas could be able to handle this. But they're one of the best in the league. Matter of fact, not one of the best. They are the best in the league when it comes to successful runs. I mentioned they're right about 24%, which is it's first. Their run steps are right around 18%. Those are plays at the line of scrimmage or negative plays. And then when you're trying to run outside against these guys, it's been kind of a trouble because teams have run the ball 34 times against them for only 134 yards.
Yeah, watching Cleveland, Judkins, it was the interior runs.
It was the interior
that
runs.
They seem to have the most success with.
Yeah. So that's kind of where they're at, and then now you have to kind of figure out, you know, when we talked about this yesterday, where do you want Micah Parsons to rush from? If you're the Cowboys, how do you try and set things up to maybe make him have to, you know, can you make sure he's on the outside? Does that help you, or do you want to make sure he's on the inside? But you're going to have a plan for him. There's just you're going to have to drag him off this field in this football game, but I did notice, like I say, the back was bothering him in that Cleveland game, and it was because they kept hitting him and hitting him and hitting him.
Well, that's your opportunity right there, I think, is to run at him. Let me ask you this. Would the Cowboys be interested in running at him so much that depending on where he's lined up, they could change the running plays, flipping a running play? Because you're going to have to run this team, I believe. If you're going to have success on them and set it up for play action passing, because like you mentioned, they have guys whose names I think are foreign to the average Cowboys fan who will be in Dak's face.
Yeah, that's the thing that I would try and set up is if you could get some running game going. But the problem with this, it does kill clock, but man, you can't kick field goals, especially with the way. Now, if you could tell me your defense could get one or two stops a half, you know, if you get maybe two stops, three stops, make them punt at least three times, you know, that's kind of your path for victory. The teams that Dallas has had trouble with are the ones that have been able to score basically on every possession or near every possession, and now they're having to chase and it takes them out of that running game stuff.
I mean, I know we have to consider it, but with a compromised offensive line, Jordan Love with Reed out, They should not have the weapons to light you up. If they're going to go out there and light you up and you're worried about kicking a field goal on one possession, so you got to go for it on fourth and six because you're terrified of them holding the ball, just pack it up and go home.
I would play, if I'm shoddy, I kind of coach this game differently. I'm more interested in maybe taking a Dan Campbell approach.
Yeah.
You know, now, their defense, I think, is good. Their offense, as you mentioned, Dawson, lacks some weapons right now. I do worry about the tight ends, but maybe it's one of those things where you Dan Campbell this thing up and just try your best to keep going for it on fourth down and just try and hold the ball as long as you can and finish drive with some points.
And Zach Tom, his backup, Anthony Belton, and then Aaron Banks again.
They're struggling
today.
They're struggling, and that's the problem that they have. Their offensive line is really beat up, but do you have the pass rushers to be able to affect the way that they play? I think Matt Eberflus, I said it earlier, I think Matt Eberflus is going to have to maybe do some things that he's uncomfortable with. The man coverage stuff, I think he's going to have to blitz more. You know, I think he's going to have to, because you could affect Jordan Love in the pocket. There'll be some poor throws.
you're not going to be a bend but don't break defense anytime soon.
I don't think so.
What do you think about Jadeveon Clowney saying, how much of a difference could he have made against Chicago? A lot, man. Just bringing my energy, my effort out there. I think that's going to be enough for me. Just let my play do the talking. I mean, yeah, you have to hope that Clowney, Bland, and Diggs, and then lessons learned from Giants and Bears. Just evaluate that. The new guys coming in with Bland rejoining the secondary and Jadeveon Clowney.
We don't
18% of your starting lineup.
Yeah, we don't know about with Clowney what you expect. You would hope that he could come in and give you something against a couple of tackles that really have struggled, but. You know, you need that, but I think you're going to need this secondary. To me personally, I'm not really interested in taking Stewart off the field at the nickel. You know, I'm more likely to keep Stewart at nickel and let Bland and Diggs play on the outside. And then we always talked about maybe using Elam in a way of maybe using him against Tucker Kraft, the tight end. Maybe put a bigger corner on Tucker Kraft. And try and limit the number of passes he sees.
I mean, injuries are a big part of this equation already, just three games in. Krusty's Corner brought to you by Reliant Air Conditioning, gimmick-free AC repair and replacement. He previewed the Packers' offense for you yesterday. That was at 3:40 if you want to go back and watch with the Odyssey app or YouTube or whatever it is. But Cowboys Wire today, let me see if I can. This was Katie Drummond. 10 players the Cowboys are desperately waiting to return to the field. I know in the offseason I had the most unwelcome explanation for Cowboys' failure, and it was that they're basically leading the league and losing all pros and pro bowlers to injury over the last 4 years. I don't even know how you begin to try to fix this. Obviously, there's that annual player survey that doesn't rank their training staff very high, but I think that comes down to personnel. They did a really nice job from about 2015 to 2020 limiting the injuries, and I know they did it, you know, through the draft. It was kind of a personnel thing. But listen to this. How much would Josh Butler help? I think quite a bit. Kalen Carson, I'm not sure.
He's not as good as we thought he was right now.
Jonathan Mingo would help you in the running game. Mm-hmm. And then this is the top seven guys missing. Siobhan Revel, rookie corner, I think he would help, but it's hard to know for sure. Cooper Beebe is out. Perry and Winfrey, DeMarvian Overshone, Tyler Booker, Deron Bland, and C.D. Lamb. I just think as much as coaches love to say next man up, the deck is stacked significantly. It's a lot. And I'm not giving up hope. I think it's interesting that the line went up to 7.5 some books. I saw it today on Bet Online back at 6.5. I think that Cleveland loss exposed quite a bit about the Packers. They look like a runaway freight train, but now that plus the injuries, maybe the injury to Reed at wide receiver, they're leading receiver from 2024 is going to make them at least beatable if you can get some stops. All righty, we're coming back to Cross with Fred and Blake, see what they have cooking here for you coming up in the G-Bag Nation on your home of the Cowboys.
Listen up, football fans, you won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.